Good evening, everyone. Happy Shabbat. Welcome to Yada Ya Radio. We've got a full cast of characters here. We've got JB back on the mend after a surgery to put some more screws in your shoulder and took some out. Is that the case?
Yeah, actually, they took all of it out and replaced it with all new stuff, apparently. They got in there and it was a little worse than they thought, so they just put it in.
Are you going to be the $6 million man before we're done?
No, I'm going to be the $600 man. I can't afford $6 million.
Okay.
So would it be fair to say that
my
you were screwed?
Rake.
Yeah, he's been screwed. He has been screwed.
Okay, well, that's
hello,
what
Larry.
I was wondering.
Yeah, hello, Larry.
It's all good over here. Best of the seventh, everybody. Best of the seventh.
Seventh, and hi, Kirk. Kirk began the observations program by saying he had a new favorite passage, and it happened to be in. And Judges, the second chapter, as because it's just so overtly condemning of Christianity, where God just said, there is no chance that I'm ever going to split my covenant into two, to have a second covenant, or to annul, or to break my covenant forever. And so, of course, that was just an absolute death knell for Christianity. But as we continue, we came to one of my favorite passages because of really the kind of the sweeping testimony that's involved in it. It's found in Jeremiah. Yahweh uplifts Jeremiah 44. It's 22-25. And the reason I'm so fond of this particular passage is that it's overtly condemning of Christianity. And so, if you don't mind, I want to just get us to the point where I came to recognize what the five appalling events that took place that Yahweh was talking about. So, here we are. It begins. And we do have an echo here. I don't know if somebody's on a speakerphone, but the speakerphone won't work if that's the case. So, Yahweh could no longer endure the unfolding consequence of it. He could no longer overcome or comprehend the protestations which were repeating again and again with regard to the actual lifting up, the promotion of, and the genuine and universal acceptance of the presence of absolute wrong, of grievous evil, of the horribly troubling nature of the abusive and insulting practices and ruthless dealings because of the presence of the detestable abominations, confounding deceptions, and repulsive rituals associated with idol worship, which you have engaged in. Now, that's about as condescending and critical of religion as possible, and I'm going to get back to that in a moment. But it's this statement that I want to address and then at least begin a conversation on. Therefore, as a result of being religious, it has come to be that your realm is moving towards becoming ruined, towards something horrible, an object of scorn, where appalling and atrocious events will unfold as a result of the contemptible formulation of a curse which diminishes your status, causing a person to become lowly and little, resulting in the absence of life. Now, there's more to this than that. But, Larry, are you aware of a name which means lowly and little?
Paulos.
Paulos. Paulos would be lowly and little. And what did Yahweh say about Shaul, which was Paulos' given name in Chabaouk? Did he have anything specific to say about him?
Well, yeah, he said he was the plague of death.
That would be the absence of life, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty bad. You know.
Okay. I said this lowly and little person is going to result in the absence of life. That would be the same as saying Shaul is the plague of death. Except this time he's referencing Paul. So I wanted to think since Yahweh predicted it, and since he has broached the subject, let's consider the candidates. Here's some candidates which I think are the five, and I chose five because five is the number of Satan. Of confusion. Let's consider the five most appalling events in human history. Now, if you've got, you guys have one that you want to take off the list or others you want to put on it, I'm game for this. But here are my five. first. Rome sentences Theosia to death. They rip most of the skin off of his body, and then they nail him to an upright pole on Passover in 33 CE. You know, on a 1 to 10 scale of bad things to do, I think torturing God would probably be up there as a million on a 1 to 10 scale.
Yeah.
So I've got that as the first. Second, in 60 CE, a Roman, under a Latin name Paulos, which just happens to mean lowly and little, in a book devoted to Rome, not only created Christianity, the deadliest religion in human history, but he told believers to submit to the Roman government and to hate Jews. So I'm putting that as a second. My list here is chronological. A second. Third, Rome destroyed Yahweh's temple in 70 CE, and they used the wealth they looted from it and Israelite slaves to build the Roman Colosseum, which is the most hellacious tribute to national, military, and religious depravity ever conceived. Fourth, Hadrian crucified hundreds of thousands of Israelites, burning others alive with the Torah wrapped around them, sacked Jerusalem, and salted the land, renaming it after a perverse adversary in 133 CE. And fifth, the Roman Catholic Church was imposed in 400 CE by the Roman Emperor Theodosius, spreading this Pauline plague worldwide. Those are my five candidates for the appalling events that were going to befall Yahweh's people that are being predicted here.
That's a pretty good list.
Pretty bad list.
But think about
most
that.
Subject, yes.
Yeah, well, it all happened. It all happened.
And,
you know, there it is. Now, can you imagine running around claiming you're pleasing God and this is the outfit you're attached to? In his letter, he called them the whore, flat out, straight
the
up.
Whore. Whore. The whore of Babylon. They're the most treacherous, most evil institution in all of human history, according to God. And Paulos, in a book devoted to the Romans, says that the government was installed by God, it gets its authority for God, and you should submit to them. They're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, over in Hosea, not to mention this in entire group of passages, Yahweh says, you put kings in power and governors in power. I didn't know them. I didn't even know them. You put them in power. Of course, according to Paulos, everybody in power is there because God's manipulating the matrix,
Wait till we get to the 12 things God has to say about human authority and governments. Yeah, methinks that Paul and Yahweh were not on the same wavelength. So, the beginning of that statement, so Yahweh could no longer endure it. He couldn't overcome it, and he couldn't comprehend it. So he's talking about these protestations regarding actually lifting up and accepting the presence of absolute wrong, grievous evil, and horribly troubling, abusive, insulting, and ruthless practices. These are detestable abominations and religious rituals. And so as it relates to religion, God is saying, I can't endure it. Now, if he can't endure it, how many religious people are there going to be in his home in heaven?
None.
Zero. He said, I can't endure it. He didn't say, I might consider enduring it. He says, yeah, it's kind of irritating, but, what am I to do? There you go. No, he said, I can't endure it. So if he can't endure it, there are going to be no religious people in heaven. The second thing he said is that I can't overcome it. Now, I think God's pretty strong.
Yeah.
I think he has lots of power. But there are things God cannot do. and he's listed one of the things that he's incapable of doing. He cannot overcome. He can't fix religion. He can't save somebody that's religious. He can't.
Yeah, he can't make them choose. He can't make them make proper choices. That's what he's saying there. I can put it all out there, but I can't. Yeah, right. My words don't mean anything to these
people. He is saying what you say on this program once a week, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
What he is saying is that the reason I can't overcome the religious depravity is that they won't listen to what I have to say. And if they won't listen to what I have to say, I can't help them. So I can't overcome religion. There's nothing I can do to prevail against religion because the religious people will not even listen to what I have to say.
And by the way, that should make everybody out here feel better because I see it all day long, you know, postings where people say, you know, I tried to talk to my mom. I tried to talk to my brother. I tried to talk to my daughter. And it doesn't matter. I mean, it just doesn't matter. And it's not necessarily... I just want to say it's not necessarily that they're running off and they're Christians, which is almost hopeless unless they realize something's wrong there. If they might be secular humanists, that might be their religion. It could be any number of men's philosophies or what have you.
Well, if you look at the abominations being promoted by political correctness and socialist secular humanism, they're almost as bad as the religious perversions. But what God is saying here is that he can't resolve religion. He can't overcome religion. He can't fix religion. If he can't do it, and, you know, he's pretty smart. He is very articulate. If he can't do it, how in the hell are we going to do it? We can't do it.
We can't. We cannot.
We can't. And it's
that goes back to dragging people out of Babylon, kicking and screaming. And they have to do what Abraham did, just like we have. You have to walk out of there of your own volition.
Yeah. How many prerequisites are there of for participation in the covenant?
Five.
Well, there's five conditions. How many prerequisites?
One of the five conditions is a prerequisite. Walking out of Babylon is a prerequisite.
Right. It is a prerequisite. That's the difference between the prerequisite is one of the five conditions. That is correct. But there's one of the five conditions that's a prerequisite that you have to do first, and it was listed first.
Oh, you have to get to know Yahweh to walk out of Babylon.
First thing you have to do is you've got to walk out of Babylon before you can even get to know him. He won't spend any time with you. He won't have a conversation with you. He won't do anything for you until you walk out of the confusion of religion. And so God's saying that since the only path to him, the first step is to walk away from religion. If you're religious, he can't help you. Only when you choose to cease being religious can God's testimony begin to resonate with you, where you get to know him and where you begin to understand what he's offering. You come to like him, come to trust him. You know, the people you talk to on your Facebook site, Larry, they don't much like God.
No, most of them don't. Nope. They don't like anything that he's got to say, really.
No, they don't like they don't like the terms and conditions of his covenant. They don't even like his covenant. Call it old.
They don't like his words laid down in any accurate fashion. They don't like it. They come up with every reason.
Is that Lo Yakol doesn't just mean that I can't endure, and it doesn't just mean I cannot overcome. It also means I can't comprehend. No, God's pretty smart. No, he's smart enough to conceive the language for life. He was smart enough to conceive a universe that is, in all likelihood, six dimensions. He's smart enough to come up with a plan for the Torah and the language to convey it in. I'm going to grade him as really, really smart. And he says, I can't comprehend religion. I just can't comprehend it.
Yeah, not interesting.
You know, from his point of view, it's just so stupid.
Well, it's reality versus fairy tales. And somebody chooses fairy tale over reality, and the reality is going to save them. He tells them all that. He tells us all that.
Yeah. It's absolutely mind-boggling, insane. You know, as a matter of fact, today as we were doing a trying to hear just a quick review of what God's view was of Christianity and what you really have to buy into to be a Christian. So I was this is something that I shared with Kirk earlier today. Let me read this to you. This is, in essence, what God has to be telling Christians for Christianity to be true. It is as if their God said, "You cannot trust my original plan because it was a cruel hoax. And even though I told you otherwise, and although I proved that this was my plan, and even though I said that it would prevail forever, in actuality, I was a complete failure." So I asked I asked a cruel and vicious man, a duplicitous man, a sexual pervert, an egomaniac, a man who was insane and demon-possessed all by his own admission, to come up with an entirely different scheme. Not only did the new one contradict everything I had said, unlike the original plan, I provided no evidence or proof of the new plan's validity. So here is the result. Just reject everything I had to say as God and believe this man exclusively, and you'll be saved.
That seems like a winning argument.
But there's no part of that that's a stretch. There's no part of that that's just, I mean, every bit of that is required to be a Christian. So when God says, "I can't comprehend it," I can't comprehend why anybody would do that. I mean, I don't mean to be insulting, but Christianity is just mind-boggling stupid.
But pure, simple ignorance.
Well, by that definition,
ignorance is not knowing. Believing that which is impossible goes beyond ignorance.
But you have to know the facts in order for it to understand that it's impossible. They don't even know the facts.
If you don't know the facts, let's just say, like for example, let's say that you know nothing about what Yahweh said. You'd still have to do that little paragraph I just read. Mm-hmm. That doesn't require really knowing much of anything in terms of facts. I agree with you. Knowing the facts empowers understanding, and it empowers logical analysis. And the facts are all counter to Christianity. But even if you don't know any of the facts, how in the world could you read? How could you be a Christian and not bother to read Paul's letters? And if you read Paul's letters, how in the world could you believe the moron that wrote Galatians and Romans is so unbelievably stupid? Why would you choose to believe him?
That's brainwashing right there. That's indoctrination.
Yeah, I think so.
That told from the time you're 2 years old that this book is the inerrant word of God.
Yeah, this is the inerrant word of God, even though it's filled with contradictions.
We don't read those parts.
So Yahweh could no longer endure the unfolding consequence. He couldn't even comprehend it. And what are they talking about here? They detest. This is Tolbah. Tolbah is religious abominations. Therefore, you know, it has come to be that your realm is moving toward becoming ruined. Something horrible, an object of scorn, or appalling atrocity will unfold. As a result of the contemptible formulation of a curse which diminishes your status and causes a person to become lowly and little, resulting in the absence of life. Well, that is so Pauline, it almost hurts to even have to read it. On account of the presence of such, you have burned incense and made offerings. You've been religious, and by association you have sinned against forfeiting your position on the path to approach Yahweh. Moreover, You've not listened to the voice of Yahweh, nor walked in his Torah, in his inscribed and clearly communicated prescriptions of what should be done to be included, or in his restoring testimonies. So here, if there was any question as to what the antidote is for being religious, it's 1, 2, 3. 1, listen to Yahweh. Okay, how do you listen to Yahweh?
Shema Torah.
Yeah, recite his Torah. So, you have not listened to Yahweh. What is it that Christians don't do? What do secular humanists don't do? Don't spend any time in the Torah. Right. So you
they,
not
they don't listen to his words. I mean, he calls them his words. He doesn't call them Bible. He calls them his words. I mean, that's a point to be made. These are my words.
He has a lot of places where he uses Bible. I mean, Bible is a very common phrase.
Yeah. Confusion, devil.
But, the word by itself means to confuse and to corrupt. And Bible, as in Ba-Bel, means with the Lord.
Yeah.
And the Lord is Satan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. He doesn't have one. But the adversary sure as hell does.
Oh, yeah. He wrote it.
And so, you know, the thing that made Yosha so important to the covenant was that Yosha walked in the Torah. And so it's four things here. The first is listen to Yahweh. The second is to walk in his Torah. Now, walk in his Torah. I mean, why did he just say here, read his Torah? He could have said, Kara, recite his Torah. He could have used Shamar, which he does many, many places, observe his Torah. But he said walk in his Torah. Why do you think he chose the verb walk?
Well, you stand upright, number one. But the path is the mikvah, and that's a walking path.
Yeah, that's a walking path, the mikvah. That's the first thing that came to my mind. And JB, you said something?
I said it's an active thing.
Yeah, it's an active thing. Yeah, you have to engage. You're going someplace. You know, the Torah is guidance that takes us someplace. The reason he's talking about walking in the Torah is the Torah is guidance that directs us from man's corruption to God's home. So you walk in the Torah, which means that you're about that path which takes us home. You walk through the Torah. If you're walking through the Torah, you're on the path that leads away from human corruption and to God's home. So it's walk in the Torah, active, engaged, upright, going somewhere. And then it's in his inscribed and clearly communicated prescriptions of what one should do to be cut into the relationship. This is one of the nouns, that's one of the four nouns that's repeated so many times by Dode in the 119th Psalm. It's chukah, the feminine of chuk. Choke means
choke. Mm-hmm.
To cut in, to inscribe, to engrave, and to cut in. And so chukah is the feminine of that, because the Torah is a feminine noun. So if you're going to be cut into the inscribed path that's provided in the Torah, if you're going to pay attention to that, the prescriptions which were chiseled in stone and that cut you into the relationship, it needs to be feminine. So because Torah is feminine.
Makes sense.
So, and it's, you know, it's we found out that the Torah is light, the set-apart spirit is light, the set-apart spirit is feminine, the Torah is feminine, the light of the set-apart spirit is the Torah. So, to walk in the Torah and in the inscribed prescriptions that cut us into the relationship, and his restoring testimonies, his eternal witness, his edah. That which is the totality of his testimony. You know, he really begins with listen to Yahweh. Well, you can listen to Yahweh by reading the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You can walk in his restoring testimonies by taking the instructions and directions that you find in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and following them. And you can do so by focusing on those inscribed, clearly communicated prescriptions that get you into the covenant relationship. But that's the antidote. That's the only antidote, I think, that there is for religion. I came to know, and I think everybody that's in this chat room and listening tonight knows that that Christianity and Islam and Rabbinic Judaism are fatally flawed, that man's religions are no more sane than the pagan religions of yesteryear. They're just absolutely contradictory, false mythology.
Right. It's like watching a movie where they're all running down to see what the gods think before they attack, the shoreline. And everybody goes, well, of course, we know now because we're so much smarter than they are. That's absolute BS. Well, right. What you're doing today, if you're religious, is absolutely BS.
Correct. So let me just give you a great example of religious BS, and I do mean BS. This is Dateline is Rome. Along the broad boulevard leading to St. Peter's Square, and it's too bad that they have demeaned the name of Shimon Kefesh to associate Shimon Kefesh with this repulsive religion known as Roman Catholicism. The faithful pressed forward. Nuns, named after, of course, the fish associated with Astarte, Ishtar, Easter, pointed cell phone cameras. Others stood on their tiptoes trying to catch a glimpse. Squadrons of police officers restrained the crowds and blocked traffic, as motorists could do little except step out of their cars and watch the show. What do you think's happening here? The ancient heart.
Let me guess, the Pope is driving by.
No, it's not even the Pope. These are for dead dudes. A national capital as one of the world's most fabled cities. Oh, yeah, well, God hates it. Ground to a halt on Friday afternoon as the sun fell over the Tiber River. The reason? The bodies of two long-deceased Roman Catholic saints, Padre Pio and Padre Leopoldo, their silicone-enhanced corpses.
Silicone-enhanced?
Corpses enclosed in glass boxes were paraded through the old city in a solemn procession to the Vatican. For many, it was an incredible spectacle. For others, it was a profoundly spiritual moment. And for others...
Are we to assume, since they're silicone-enhanced, that these are now, drag queens? What's up?
They're plastic. Remember when God says that the way to death is plasties? Well, they're plastic.
For others,
it was all a bit weird. But as tens of thousands of people descended on St. Peter's Square, the procession was a reminder that even as the Vatican has embraced the modern media age with papal Twitter accounts, papal selfies, and papal Google Hangouts, it also still communicates in the symbols and traditions of a medieval age.
Can you picture a papal Google Hangout?
We are devoted to Padre Pio, end quote, said Anna, who had come from northern Italy to see his remains. Quote, for us, it's not just an event. It has a religious meaning. Seeing him go through the streets of Rome is important to us. For what it represents.
You know, there were a lot of other drivers out there. Carried through the streets of Rome, get you any closer to God?
Other drivers out there PO'd. You want to bet? I would have been. I can tell you that.
For traffic?
For Pope Bergoglio, rolling out the two saints is a signature moment of the Jubilee year that he is called to celebrate the theme of mercy.
Well, that's great.
Next week, Francis will dispatch a group of priests around the world, the so-called missionaries of mercy, to absolve sin. And Padre Pio and Padre Leopoldo are being offered up as good examples. Oh, man. Boy, you want to talk about being lost?
I'm just I can't even fathom thinking it. I mean, that's why Yahweh is saying that he can't fathom
it.
I can't
endure it. I can't solve it. I can't overcome it. I can't comprehend it. I mean, that is so ridiculously perverse, so disgustingly stupid, so ungodly, and it's being done in the name of the world's most popular religion.
Well, what do they think is happening? I mean, what is
By the way, is it a Jubilee year?
No, sir.
Not even close. The next one is 2033.
Oh, not even close. Does there anywhere say in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that there is such thing as a Jubilee, or is it a Yobel?
It's a Yobel. There is no Jubilee anymore.
And does it say that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this Yobel, you can rename it a Jubilee. I got no problem with that. Names aren't important to me. And you know what I prefer is because my calendar is really screwed up. You know, I've got a godly calendar here, and the Roman pagan calendar is so much better. That, you know what I think is, because I really can't count, I'm pretty much a nincompoop, why don't you guys just choose Jubilees whatever you damn well please? And because I can't save, why don't you send emissaries of mercy out to the world to forgive sin?
Help me.
You think that this piece of crap known as the Pope is incapable of figuring out that 33 CE, when Yosha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and Shavuah, that maybe that was a Yobel year? And you think this piece of crap known as the Pope can maybe do some math and say, well, if 33 was a Yobel year, if that's the time that sins were forgiven because it was a Yobel year, that the next possibility for a Yobel year is 2033? I mean, how hard would it be to figure that out?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm no wizard, and, you know, I can see that. Let's see, 40 times 50 is 2,000. At 2,033.
You know, but just, if you even don't know 40 is important, if you know that the Yobel is, how many years is the Yobel?
50 years.
7 times 7 plus 1, right? 50 years.
That's it.
And you count in increments of 50.
There is no doubt that Yosha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Mekonim in 33 CE on our pagan calendars. That was year 4,000 Yah. Can you get to 2016 from 2033 in multiples of 50?
No. Can't happen. No.
Cannot happen. It's either you go back to 1993, or you go forward, and that should be at 1983. Either go back to 1983, and there's a Yobel, or you go forward to 2033. I mean, these arrogant assholes, excuse me, but that's what they are.
It's okay. Just tell it like it is, and that's
that perfect. Is how it is.
Yeah.
They're absolute scumbags. They're Yobel year, parading out, making fools of themselves by parading dead people that are filled with plastic as a religious event. Hey, do you know any place where God said, you know, I think the way to celebrate the Yobel is let's go parade some dead people through the streets?
Last thing he was saying.
Actually, weren't you prohibited, or not really prohibited, but it was discouraged?
Don't touch a dead body. Don't touch a dead body. And do not pray to or show any homage to a dead person. That's an abomination to Yahweh. You know, and if it was a Yobel year, isn't the there's three aspects of a Yobel year. One is forgiving debts. One is releasing slaves. And doesn't the land go back to Yahweh for the common use?
Yeah, that's when the Pope gives all the money.
Didn't this Pope last year?
Isn't the Catholic Church
trying
like
to give
the biggest landowner in the world?
But isn't this? Well, that's probably true too. But isn't this the Pope that wants to steal Israel and give it to the mythical people known as the Palestinians?
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah,
why
he's in
no
charge.
Problem on this? I mean, you mean there are no critics anywhere?
No.
Well, I don't
think
that there's anybody in power that's willing to lose their power because they decide to challenge him. I mean, people like us are going to call him on it, but then most people aren't going to listen.
Yeah, his butler tried to challenge him, and they threw his butler in prison.
You mean there's nobody in the press, there's nobody anywhere that you can't just stand and say, wait a minute.
He knows the press.
Almost everybody in the press is a graduate of secular humanism and the most liberal secular humanist politically correct institutions. And to graduate from them, they had to forfeit their ability to exercise good judgment.
Well, I mean, you not only have that, but, I mean, you do have, let's say, you have people in Christianity outside the realm of Catholicism or Orthodox, and we know there's plenty of them, and, yeah, they go, no, the Pope's wrong, and they spend a lot of time running the Pope down, by the way. But, as odd as that is, they still basically follow his words, and his Bible and his Sunday worship of a Lord and the pagan cross and all the rest. So, I mean, I don't really see what beef they have with them. I guess their thing is we just don't want a man at the head of it all.
We talked about the fact that Yahweh says there's two principal ingredients to the religion that he despises the most. The first is that their God is the Lord. And second, that they have incorporated the myths of Ishtar, which would be Easter, Christmas, Sunday worship, the Nativity, the Ictus symbol, the Rosary, statues to Mary, that sort of thing. Those are the two components that he lists that he is the most disgusted by. And so we were talking about earlier that Orthodox Christians, which is the second largest group of Christians, the largest is Roman Catholics at about 1.2 billion, Orthodox Christians at 500 to 600 million, and then Protestant Christians at 300 to 400 million. That Orthodox Christians and Roman Catholics the most Orthodox Protestants, which would be Anglicans and Episcopalians, still have the Mary hang-up, the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, that bit. They still got all the statuary bit. So now what you have is about 1.9, well, no, it'd be more than that. It would be about 1.9 billion of the 2.3 billion Christians worldwide that have swallowed the poison that God has listed here owns them. And then you have the evangelical Protestant Christians that haven't incorporated Mary, the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, but they got all the rest of it. They're only 95% wrong.
They won't put her down, though.
Yeah, they're only 95% wrong. I mean, how bad is that?
Yeah, and they put a cross everywhere.
Oh, everywhere. Yeah, they still celebrate Astarte's holidays and Christmas and Easter, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Therefore, for this reason, you have summoned and will encounter this evil and destructive shepherd, as it is on this day. Additionally, Yirmiyah said to all the people and to the women, choose of your own volition to genuinely listen to the word of Yahweh, all Yehuda, who are in the realm of the crucible of Mitzrayim, who are associated with the black realm of human religious and governmental oppression. That is, that's it, folks. Listen to Yahweh. And, you know, he's calling out the, he said, first of all the people and to the women. So he's talking about to everyone here. But, you know, why do you think he emphasized women here? All the people and the women.
Well, they were making a mess of cakes, if that's the group, if we're still in the same, your thing, they were,
Well, but the men were helping, too. The men were collecting the children
food.
Were collecting
they
the
food.
The men were filling
food.
The fires, and the women were making the Eucharist, communion,
mm-hmm.
and Easter cakes,
right.
And then they were drinking their wine turned into blood concoction. So, yep, the women were participating. You know, I think that the reason is that God has gone out of his way to say, fathers, you've corrupted your children to the third and fourth
mm-hmm.
generation. And it was the men that were conceiving and advancing these religions for their own good. In fact, they turned women into temple prostitutes. They didn't turn them into temple prostitutes for the benefit of the women, but for the pleasure of the men.
No,
it's for the pleasure of the men. So while there are women who are engaged in this stuff, what he's trying to say is, okay, men have really made a mess through religion. And women, you know, I don't want you to buy into this. You know, you've got a backbone, too. You've got a brain. Separate yourself for the sake of your children, for your own soul. Don't go along with this.
Well, you know, women, too, are the glue. They're always described as the glue that holds the family together. So without their participation, when they stand up and say no, this just don't work. It won't fly.
How many families would you have as a bunch of dudes hanging around?
Yeah.
That would be none.
That would be none. That would be none.
See, I think about the Muslims you're always talking about, and without the women caving, you know, they just, it's a whole different world over there in Muslim land.
Right, the women capitulated.
Mm-hmm.
Thus says Yahweh of the assembled spiritual envoys, the God of Israel, affirming, you and your wives have spoken with your mouths and with your hands, fulfilled them, and thereby promising, we will surely engage and act this way with our vows, which by association we have made, burning incense and perfume candles, while making offerings to the Queen of Heaven, pouring out drink offerings to her idolatrous image. You know, there were a few statues to Astarte, in ancient Israel. They've been unearthed, and there were a few of them. And there were some of these that have been unearthed in Babylon, in Assyria, Egypt under Isis, in Rome under Venus, throughout Greece. But you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of statues to her. I know an institution that doesn't have hundreds of statues to her, but has hundreds of thousands. In fact, I would say that if you also look at the personal shrines, there are millions.
You might get into millions. You're talking about the Catholic Church.
Right. Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church and Orthodox Christians. Collectively, there are millions upon millions. If you take all the little icons that you can buy in their knick-knack stores, maybe even hundreds of millions of statues
mm-hmm.
to the Queen of Heaven. And when they pour out their little drink offerings, what is the big thing? Substantiation, where the priest claims that they perform this great miracle, that they turn wine into the blood of Christ. So they're drinking, they're pouring out their toxic, idolatrous drink offerings right there and before the image, because there's no Catholic church without a statue to Mary. I mean, Mary and Jesus, they be the gods.
Yeah, no
Jesus
question.
Jesus is crucified. He's hanging on. He's hanging up there, deader than a doornail, hanging up there on that pagan cross. And Mary, oh boy, she's the one that you greet coming in the door, that you make the donation to, that you say a prayer to.
You know, my wife reminded me last week as we were talking about Mary that just to remind the guys, she was just a surrogate. That'd be more appropriate.
Yeah.
There's really nothing different to her, just a surrogate. She's carrying the baby for Yahweh.
How much does Yahweh have to say about Mary and the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Very. Gosh. Does she?
Let me answer the question. Nothing.
I was going to say, my mind is trying to find something. I can't find anything.
She's not even mentioned. There is a mention of a miracle that a virgin shall give birth to a child.
Mm-hmm. But not named.
Not named? Does it tell you that you can really learn a lot from this virgin? Does it tell you to pray to this virgin? Does it tell you to make an attitude to this virgin? Yeah, all it
does tell you, though, not to imitate the religious in any way. It does tell you that.
Right, it does tell you that.
And, of course, I know about a bunch of religious people, and they pray, and they venerate themselves, and they...
Now, even if you go into the so-called Christian New Testament, the commentary from Mary, in terms of teaching, is zero.
That's true.
Zero. I mean, all we have in the Christian New Testament is Gabriel telling this woman, Miriam, that, sorry with you. We'd like you to give birth to Yosef. And, it's up to you. Your choice. It's a heck of a blessing if you're willing to do it, but it's your option. Oh, it's okay with you. That's what we'd like to do. And that's it. We don't know anything more about her. We don't know what she said. We don't know what she did. We don't know what she liked, what she didn't like. We don't know what we don't know anything about her. So,
two things about her. She sent her son, Jacob, to go tell him to stop talking about all this stuff. And then she didn't recognize him when he was, he didn't recognize him after the crucifixion.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I can't think of much.
No.
And that's nothing to write home about.
No. But the only reason that in Orthodox Christianity and in Roman Catholicism, that Mary is a huge deal. And Mary is second only to the crucified and dead Jesus, is because of the role that Esther, the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, and her rosary play, along with Easter and Christmas, in the Babylonian religion.
So the point being, that's the only place you can get her. It's there. I mean, it ain't got nothing to do with the Yahweh story.
Correct. And
it doesn't even have anything to do with hearsay and letters. Forget Yahweh's words. I mean, it has a lot to do with Yahweh's words. We're reading them.
If I would create Ishtar Astarte, the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, why would Baal, the Lord,
to promote the Babylonian Trinity, to promote the concept that someone else is doing the saving other than Yahweh.
That is the Babylonian Trinity. The Babylonian Trinity is the Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, Estart, Easter, the Son of the Son, and the Lord. The Babylonian Trinity. Correct.
Yeah.
The Trinity is Babylonian. And the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, is a direct counterfeit for the set-apart spirit.
Yes.
And, I sometimes get a big... I kind of wonder. People that know Yahweh, they put out all this stuff about how horrible Satanism is. Now, I'm no proponent of Satanism.
Yeah.
But how much worse is it when people think that they're walking into a church and pleasing God and they're worshiping Satan? I mean, at least Satanists are straight up know what they're doing. So which is worse?
Well, at least they're off.
I think the counterfeit is far worse. Because
I do, too.
The Satanists are being honest.
They just say, I don't want you. I don't want no part of you. I'm going to worship this guy.
Right.
These people think they're worshiping.
To be worshiping God, when in fact the object of their worship is the Lord, Satan. I think it's far worse.
That's horrible.
I mean, you know, you're talking about the lesser of two evils here, but God doesn't.
Yeah.
There are places where God does condemn occult. Most of his condemnations here are Christianity.
Yeah, I'm straight
up burning perfume candles while making offerings to him. You know, when you go into a Catholic church, and there are offerings to Mary. Huge part of the Catholic revenue is the offerings made to Mary, and they all come in bearing little candles. They light little candles to Mary. They buy the little candles as part of the offering, and they come in with their little candles to her her idolatrous image.
Someone dies, and they go in and light a candle for them. I don't know what the hell they think that would do. You know, I will mention that, you know, if you ever have a child disappear or a loved one disappear, I'm going to tell you straight up, don't have a candlelight vigil, because I can see 100% of the time they don't work.
No.
Don't waste your time.
No.
They don't work.
No, and... You know, it's interesting. The Roman Catholic Church knew that there were 10, they call them commandments, and there are no commandments. There are three statements followed by seven instructions. But nonetheless, they...
Made up of 77 words, no less.
And they knew that the second one began, don't make or be associated with graven images, statues. And they knew that they had statues of the dead, their dead God, along with their living Queen of Heaven and Mother of God, and that their statuary was the dominant aspect of their religion. So you know what they did?
And they rewrote it, didn't they?
They removed the second statement, and they made two of the tenth. So they split the tenth in two, and they removed the second. They talk about arrogance.
Well, you know, I had a brother stop by, Wayne Mitchell, actually. He was driving through town, and he'd shown me some stuff on the rainbow, like the colors you can see in outer space and so forth through pictures. You see all seven colors, you know, depending on if you go to radio waves or visible or this or that. But we were talking, and I told him, I do not believe, you know, you make the statement they know a lot of things. You know, they might know a lot of little historic this and that and know where they corrupted things, but their knowledge is just very, very, very limited. I don't believe that any of them believe that there is a God, or believe that Yahweh exists. They certainly don't believe Yahweh's words. They couldn't. If you believe Yahweh's words, there's no way you could go in there and manipulate them and do the kind of malfeasance that you're talking about here. You couldn't do it. I mean, they just flat out, you know, what they do know is they corrupted a lot of religions to become one religion. Let's incorporate, you know, the Gratia as an example.
Yeah,
let's name it after
right.
The sun goddess. And
the melding together of all the pagan religions. It is the Babylonian religion with
those primary
Christian terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely primary. They know they did that, so then they're like, well, the basis for the Torah must also be trash, too. I mean, that's what they must think. They've obviously not done their research. Really, they haven't. I just wanted to throw that out there. I just don't believe it.
That the principal argument that secular humanists have against God is religion. And they don't know that God's anti-religious.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
Hey, I was there.
Yeah.
I was talking to my daughter, Jessica, the one that got her fellowship at the CDC. And, you know, I said, Jessica, you got to understand, honey, that Yahweh hates religion. She goes, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I got a little headway. I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope so.
But
I started realizing all of my arguments against God were against religion and not God.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why that it is easier for an agnostic to come to know Yahweh than it is for anyone else. Because once they know that all of their arguments against God were actually arguments against religion, and that God was also against religion, and that if you know Yahweh, none of those arguments exist.
Yeah, the straw man disappears. It just goes away.
So here's I want to move into Samuel 8. And it came to be, accordingly, when Samuel grew old, he appointed his sons judges to resolve disputes, Shaphat, on behalf of Yisrael. Now, there's this big thing about, you know, judges, and what does it mean? Well, that must have been another kind of political office, wasn't it? No, the term Shaphat means decision makers, adjudicators of matters between parties, those who exercise good judgment.
Moshe did it all the time.
Moshe did it all the time. Yeah, Moshe was followed, even though he was not called a Shaphat, he played that role. And what did Moshe use as the basis for his decisions?
Torah.
Which was the exact same thing that these guys used, the Torah. So this was Yahweh's way of communicating his plan to his people, knowing that some were illiterate and therefore could not read his Torah guidance for themselves. It was also a means to keep peace in the family. If there was a disagreement, either personal or interpreting something Yahweh conveyed, the Shaphat would adjudicate the matter in accord with the Torah and resolve the dispute. Perfect.
Yeah.
The Constitution was the Torah, and just in case you couldn't read it, or if two people had different interpretations, you know, we occasionally disagree on things in the Torah.
Sure.
Well, the purpose of the Shaphat was to adjudicate those disagreements. Now, I don't think that they, by the way, resolved every disagreement. I think that some of the disagreements are designed to be just that, to enable two members of the covenant or more to have a different view on things, because I think that's healthy. Now, we talk about Pesach, Matzah, and Makodim, and the, and, you know, is it the, how many days do you eat unyeasted bread, and when does that begin, and when does it end? And there's some different conclusions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I think so long as you're thoughtful about it, I think that's good, not bad. So I don't think that they attempted to resolve everything, but the things that could be resolved based on the Torah, they resolved.
Some things are very straightforward.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, what are y'all going to do? Which are you, everybody doing on Passover? In the March one or the April?
You know, I haven't looked yet. It's a ways out, but I will do that, and I will be prepared to answer this time next week.
All right.
You know, my view is that one of those two, the renewed light on the moon, is closer to the vernal equinox than the other. And I always pick the one.
Yeah, the first one is. The first one is, actually. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you already looked at the first one. If the first one is, then that's the one.
Well, Thomas and Honey Hall called me, and they were asking. I said, you know, I'm really looking at the second. The closest to the vernal equinox is the first. And Honey brought that out. So, I mean, I know that's the closer of the two.
Now, I want to say that, you know, somebody would say, well, you're basing the year on a pagan thing, you know, with the vernal equinox is not astrological. It's astronomical. Comical. All the vernal equinox means is that's the time that marks spring, where the length of the days and nights are exactly the same. Equinox. And so it is, and the reason that's important is that there are four periods of the solar year that one is when the days and nights are the same in the spring, one where the days and the nights are the same length in the fall, one is halfway in between those two, which is the summer solstice, where the days are the longest that they will be in the northern hemisphere, shortest they'll be in the southern hemisphere, and the other one's the winter solstice. which is
which Yawa really doesn't he doesn't recognize winter. It doesn't appear. I never see him speak of winter necessarily.
No, he doesn't, because it's the after the seventh month. He talked about how you go about establishing the first month, and so he doesn't talk about what happens after the seventh month. So the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and sometimes 13th month of the year, he doesn't talk about. But the reason that he has an intercalendar month where you have to know when to start the new year for month number one is that method ensures that Pesach is always in conjunction with the renewal of spring.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's always consistent with the symbol that he uses for it, which is the abib, the ripening of barley, where it's still green and growing and receptive. I mean, that's the symbol.
So it's not the Arabic calendar where the seasons float around the calendar.
Right, because
spring may be
Muhammad's
first
God
month,
was
maybe the
recognized
month.
By, Muhammad's God was the moon, and so he said that there is no way that was one of those terrible corruptions of the Jews that the months month had to be added. So he says no, the months are fixed, and so he created a calendar that's not fixed, that migrates all around, and so you can't have an annual meeting that's associated with harvest and the symbolism of harvest, or with the new grain and the growing and the receptiveness, the greenness of that grain, if it moves around the year. So it has to be fixed to the cycle of the Earth's rotation around the sun. And so the vernal equinox is the way to fix it. So it's the renewed light on the moon's surface closest to the vernal equinox. That's how you go about it. And it also means...
Yeah, and they would add a 13th month, every 3 years or so or something like that?
Yeah, every 2 to 3 years. And if you do that, mm-hmm. what you find is that by doing that, you end up with 365 and one quarter days per year.
Works out good.
Works out perfect. Yeah, it's a perfect way to keep time. So it came to be that Samuel grew old and he appointed his sons to resolve disputes on behalf of Yisrael. And it came to be that the name of his firstborn son was Yoel.
Yeah. Great name.
Oh, good name. I mean, first of all, Shamuel. I mean, Shamuel's not your average dude, right?
No,
Shamuel listens to God. So, you know, if you're Shamuel and you're going to name your sons, you're going to do a good job. The first son is Yahweh's God. The second son is Abia.
Mm-hmm.
The father is Yahweh.
Hitting on all cylinders.
Oh, yeah, man. He's cooking with gas. This is cooking with olive oil. Yeah, this is good as it gets. Yahweh's God. Yahweh's the Father. They exercise good judgments to resolve disputes. And Beersheba. Beersheba is the well of the promise of seven. From Ma'ar, the spring, and Sheba, the promise of seven. So the man who listened to God knew that by simply introducing his sons by name, he would reveal the two most important truths in the universe. Yah was God, and the Father is Yah. Their occupation was also telling. Just as Yah was Torah was written to justly resolve disputes for those who exercise good judgment regarding it and its instructions, Yoel and Abiyah were engaged in the Shaphat. So, and not just anywhere, in the spring of the promise of summer. But it's not all olive oil. And yet, his sons did not walk in his ways, but they stretched out and turned away after the dishonest and wrongful prophet. They received and accepted gifts and turned aside from the means to justly resolve disputes. Okay, so here we're two lads that in the dad's footsteps were going to be Shaphat. They were going to resolve disputes on behalf of Yisrael, and the thing which disqualified them is they accepted payment.
Right.
Well, you know, you could translate it bribes.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the primary meaning of the word. It is they received and accepted laka, they collected gifts. So tod, presents and rewards, payments for a favor. Now, can the gifts, the chokad, be a bribe?
Right.
Yeah.
I sure can influence you.
Yeah, money that will influence the outcome of their services. But just at the most literal meaning, they received and accepted payment. That's what they did. So, do you know anybody out there pretending to work for God that receives payment for it?
You know, I got to tell you. As a Christian,
yeah.
I used to sit there and wonder which guy in this room would I not want to be? Because, you know, I thought there was a judgment day, and
right.
There is for them, not for us. But I thought on judgment day, which guy would I not want to be? And every time it came down to the preacher. I would not want to be the guy who was supposedly sharing God's words and making a living off them. I mean, that was brain-dead simple then, and I knew nothing.
What this says is if you're receiving payment and claiming to serve God, then
it's impossible.
You are you're fooling people. You're accepting a bribe. You are not working for God. It just says here, point in fact, that you can't accept money and serve any role for God. And, you know, we are all about the business of communicating Yahweh's mishpat, the way to exercise good judgment and to properly decide. That is what our calling is to convey the mishpat. And if we're accepting money for it, we're disqualified. So if you write a book on it, better give it away free. If you want to serve with Yahweh, better do so free. That would disqualify every Christian pastor, every Roman Catholic and Orthodox Christian priest, all of the cardinals, all of the bishops, all of the popes.
All the rabbis.
Rabbis, all of the publishers that work for religious companies.
It goes all the way down to the nuns.
Right.
They get room and board, even if they don't give them a stipend or something.
Did they receive?
Well, that would even include the special Karaite Jew, Nehemiah Gordon.
Yeah.
That would even include him.
Yeah.
Great scholar, masterwork that he is, that can't find Yahusha, even though he even pronounces it Yeshua. He can't even find him in the whole Torah. But, you know, a bunch of idiots like us, unlearned clowns, we can.
Whenever I'm doing any kind of research online and I come to a web page that has four donate here buttons within like 2 minutes of being there, I know I'm not going to learn anything there.
There's a clue.
I haven't done it in a while, but my recollection is that there are 220 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Yahusha is written out as Yahusha.
I think it's 216, I believe.
All right, so
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And there's two on the other.
Yeah, there's two.
Well, this is off the material you did, you know, explaining it, why it's Yahusha as opposed to Yahushua.
Right. I've got no problem if I'm, you know, as I said, my recollection is right around 220. If it's 216, that's
I'm
fine with that. But how can you say I
it's
can't
your
find
work.
If there's 216 of them?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's my point.
Get it.
Got a problem.
If you can't find it, you're not looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not finding it, you're just not looking. or you're blind.
Yeah, and you're playing stupid. Playing stupid. And you even show right in there how...
In fact, there's a book... Yahushua
versus Yahushua.
There's a book that is entitled Yahushua. It's the book that completes the Torah. And the title of the book
would be Joshua, as they call it.
Yahushua. Yeah, the book of Yahushua. That's its title.
I know.
But
Nehemiah can't find it in there.
Yeah, there
and
are
by
two
the way, he translated the Dead Sea Scrolls. Of course, his translations don't read correctly.
Yeah, one of the problems is you there's only one book that you can actually translate from the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yahushua,
because all the rest are fragments and incomplete. So you have to fill in from the Masoretic on the rest of them. And the challenge is, of course, to do so, you have to be just extraordinarily careful because it's not just a matter of taking the words, which are usually in a much older version of Hebrew, and then converting them into, as he would do, Babylonian Hebrew, and then to use with the Masoretes in their vowel pointing. You really have to go right to the roots and say, all right, these are the letters. These letters prior to vowel pointing could mean any one of these following things. It's usually quite a list. And now in the context, knowing the who, what, and why of the discussion, which one of these meanings is valid? And it's a lot of work.
So usually, there's five or six meanings, and about three or four of them are valid, or two or three are valid, some to different degrees than others. But that becomes the trickiest part, figuring out how to work all of them in, because really they're all kind of conveyed and intended.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I mean, some may have a secondary meaning, even. I know that.
Secondary and tertiary and...
Oh, of course.
Even a fourth meeting on some of them.
Right.
Right.
And that's the reason why we have to mishpat as we read the Torah. We have to mishpat as we read the Torah. We have to exercise good judgment.
But it's still the challenge and the fun of it all.
Yes, to respond correctly.
Well, it's just important for people to note, because I had somebody last night say, now... I'm new to the group, and who is this guy Richard, and who is this guy Craig? I don't want to just blindly follow someone. And I said, Craig is not a guy, and Richard either, that are going to say blindly follow me. I said that, what Richard cites about is breaking down in very simple terms what a person needs to do to get on the path. And what Craig is doing is doing actual translation rather than going back to the most recent corruption. Well, as an example, calling Torah law or calling Kodesh holy or something like this, some nonsense like that. Going to the root of the word, seeing how it was first used the first time by Yahweh in that regard, and then putting it in context. Now, you can take your pick. Do you want the most recent corruption, which... I can put them side by side. You'll see one makes no sense at all, and the other makes sense all the way through.
Right.
That's just how it works.
And if anybody, Richard says this all the time, he writes it very eloquently, which is, if you're interested in who I am and my bio, go away.
You're wrong.
I'm irrelevant.
You're barking up the wrong tree.
Right. My view is the exact same thing. If you want my bio, I will tell you that I have no credentials which will impress anyone. Then I am absolutely irrelevant. We're not writing. We're not translating the works of Larry here. If we were translating the works of Larry, it'd be important to know who Larry is. But we're not.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's not my autobiography. I had a guy leave Unpopular Truth because he didn't like an opinion that I had stated. And I said, my opinions are irrelevant. This has got nothing to do with me. So he sent me a thing. He said, I don't think you and I can any longer be friends. And he was waiting, for some big explanation or please or something. And I said, you're right. Because I thought, if you think I'm trying to get somebody to follow me, you're on the wrong page to begin with. In fact, you're not even in the same ballpark. So, bye. And I blocked him.
So here, the I want to just dive into, because Lacan, Todd, is such an important concept. It means to receive a gift, to accept a present, to collect a reward. It is payment for a favor. However, in this context, following betza, wrongful profit and unjust revenue, it can be extrapolating to receiving money with a quid pro quo. But from Yahweh's perspective...
There's your bribe. That's your bribe, Kirk.
But that's, yeah.
It can't be. It's a gift.
No, it can't be. It's just that every translation goes to bribe. That's not with the word. That's not... Can the word be extrapolated in that context, bribe? Yes. But if you go there to the most extreme extrapolation and you miss its primary meaning, you'll miss the fact that Yahweh is not pleased when people take money claiming to be offering evaluations of his Torah. If you're making money on it, you ought not be doing it. From Yahweh's perspective, any gift, any monetary reward, any payment of any kind is inappropriate.
And how hard is that? How hard is that? See, this is why Yahweh himself is flabbergasted here. How hard is that? I mean, would you ever charge anybody to tell them the truth about anything? Would you really? I wouldn't.
You know, if the truth was that, I learned something about how to produce energy. And it was
opportunity. Okay.
Yeah, I've got no problem charging people that. If the truth is it's not my truth, it's not my revelation, I didn't come up with it, all I'm doing is sharing what God said, to charge people for what God said. If God didn't charge us, who in the hell are we to charge others for what he said and did?
Yeah, and act like a superior being of some kind. Because that goes into it here. I mean, that's part of it. You're superior to this person.
A monetary exchange corrupts the plan he has provided at no cost.
You know the story of where Yahusha, threw the money changers out of the temple, and I believe that, by the way. You know what the Christian rendition, I've been in a couple of groups where they're talking about it, and they weren't giving proper currency exchanges, they said.
No, it wasn't that they were there at all. It was because they were...
Right, JB.
It wasn't about the money, man.
They were making money in Yahweh's home. Yeah. Just don't do that. You know, it's one
I'll never forget the last time I was actually in a church was Patty's uncle had passed away, and we went for the funeral. And it was the funniest thing I'd ever saw. They had a machine in the lobby where you could, in case you don't have cash for the tithe, you could donate. It said, give a blessing.
Really?
Take your credit card. Yeah, that's a big thing now in churches is they have a machine that takes credit cards.
So I guess they got tired of people like me who don't really carry a whole lot of cash on them. Oh, I can't find. I ain't got no cash. Oh, well, we take
that's
got to
become a little embarrassing. I mean, it's got to be a little embarrassing at some point. You got to throw up a paint machine.
God lambasts religious leaders for making merchandise of men.
God, I guess.
God is wholly opposed to a paid clergy. If you want to work with him, there are two hard and fast rules. First, communicate what he said accurately.
Accurately.
And second,
at least as accurately as you are capable of.
That is correct.
I don't think any of us are perfect at conveying Yahweh's word. We're doing it to the best of our ability.
Yeah, of course. I think that is implied in the statement. You're going to communicate what he has said as accurately as absolutely possible. And second, do not accept any money for doing so. That's it. He is not charging us for his Torah, for entrance into his covenant family, for enriching his
No, he's quite the opposite. He was paying the penalty. That's why there's no charge for us.
Correct.
That's that. There's no charge. I mean, he says without money or cost. In fact, listen to me carefully. Incline your ear. Come to me. Listen, so that you may live, so that you'll be able to establish an everlasting covenant relationship with you. And that's Yashaya 55:3. So no money or cost. That's right. Because money's ridiculous in this context, and cost he paid.
Yeah. God doesn't want our money. And to pay him for what he has done is demeaning.
It's an insult.
And so, well, yeah, and so for us to charge for what he has done is even more ridiculous. Religious clerics, and that would be all of them, violate both aspects of this. They accept money for their services, and they consistently turn those paying them away from Yahweh means to justly resolve disputes. For these reasons, most pastors and priests will spend their eternity separated from God in Sheol. So, the next statement here is, rather than go directly to God and to his Torah, unfortunately, the Israelites went to Shamuel. I mean, they could have gone to the Torah, and they would not have had any issue with the two boys accepting gift. But they didn't. They instead went to Shamuel to complain. That's perplexing, because as we learned in the, as we were considering the previous statements in Shamuel, who did Shamuel encourage them to turn to when they had questions? Did he say, you know, you really ought to turn to me. I'm the answer man. I can.
No, but he said, you ought to ask Yahweh. You ought to turn to Mishpah. Yeah, sure.
Wasn't that the whole thing that he said in 7:3? If you can turn to Yahweh and you come to comprehend him with all your heart, then, you know, he'll defend you. He'll save you. He'll rescue you. And so that's what he said. Turn to him. But no, they didn't do that. So then the elders, every one of those advanced in age and mature of Yisrael. Now, by the way, Yisrael, and we talked about this briefly. I have not made as big a point of this as I should have. So I think I've erred here. Yisrael is Yisrael, individuals who engage and endure with God. However, Sarah doesn't just mean engage and endure. It also means struggle, wrestle, and fight. So Yisrael is one of those terms where, depending on your perspective, your attitude, you can either be an individual who engages and endures with God, or you can be an individual who wrestles and fights with God. And Yisrael is currently in the second category. Yisrael at this time was in that second category. Well, anyway, those who are wrestling with God gathered together, and they came to, not Yahweh, Shamuel, for their, now this is really interesting, I'm probably the only one on the planet that's going to translate this way, but they came to Shamuel for their betrayal. Now the word is ha-rama. They came, so I'm going to give you the primary definitions of it, and you know, if I've misstated it, then I would love somebody smarter than me to tell me.
Ha-Rama isn't very good either way.
No.
No matter how you take it.
To mislead, dealing treacherously, to beguile and to deceive, to abandon and to renege on the agreement. Now note, Rama is a town in Benjamin. It speaks of...
Where Sheol was from.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It speaks of maggots and of man-made religious shrines, whereby people gather to worship. It is from Ram, which means the exalted and lofty nobles are loud and they are proud.
That's the root word of for rabbi, isn't it? Really?
No, it's Rab is the root word for rabbi. Now, but this
that's
means
what I'm saying.
No, Rab. This is Ram.
Rab.
It's
just Ram.
Rama,
yeah.
R-A-M-A. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's RB as opposed to RM. RM is lofty, exalted, and lofty nobles who are loud and proud. And Rama means maggots, man-made religious shrines where people gather to worship, to mislead, dealing treacherously, to beguile and to deceive, to abandon and to renege. So they came to Shamuel for betrayal. To deal treacherously. That's a talking about being on the wrong side, having the wrong argument, because last time I checked, every time that that Shamwell went to God, God listened to what Shamwell had to say, and God replied. And God expressed great affection for Shamwell. God even told Shamwell some of the most intimate things about his reaction to his people. I mean, Shamwell and God were buds. And so, if you take the person that God was closest to on the planet, loved the most on the planet, was the most conversant with on the planet, and you
but
come to him for
Shamwell.
A purpose of betrayal. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you come to him for betrayal, you know, you're not exactly at that point making God real happy. So, what's interesting here?
Although isn't that that's the normal human reaction, isn't it? That's the normal human religious reaction. They don't go to God; they go to their pastor. They go to somebody who they think knows God. Isn't that right? They don't ask about God.
Yahweh's going to say, you know, Shamwell. Yeah, they are betraying you. That's true. But far more than them betraying you, they're betraying me. Absolutely. What's interesting here is we have two completely different options available to us with regard to the final word, Ha Ramah. There was a town in Benjamin called Ramah, thereby associating this misguided action with history's most infamous descendant of Benjamin, Shaul Paul. The other option is even more telling, and that is simply to translate Ramah, thereby depicting the elders as treacherous, beguiling, and deceitful, and revealing that the actual intent of their gathering was for elders to act like nobility, elevating their own status by being loud and proud, thereby reneging on the original agreement and abandoning the relationship. These maggots were plotting to build their own religious shrines in order to worship their own gods.
Or just to elevate themselves in that lofty place.
You know, some of these names that I hear too. You know, I mean, we've been through this. How does anybody that understands anything about the Torah, I mean, anything at all, some guy like me, you know, name their son Sheol? You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, how does somebody name themselves lowly and little? Polos, right? But,
right.
You know, how does somebody name themselves Ram?
Right.
You know, like Rahm Emanuel is an example that's running Chicago.
Or how about Ramallah? You know, the Muslim town called Ramallah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rama, maggots.
Yeah.
Well,
who
does
to predict, to betray. You know, how would you name yourself after, I mean, if you're going to name yourself after a people because you want to claim what God gave to Israel, why wouldn't you pick Canaanites? But they picked Philistines, who are the military invaders and foreigners who do not belong.
Yeah, who commit terrorist attacks.
Who use terrorist attacks.
They create fear and everything.
Yeah.
And
why
who
would you
would
have
name
a themselves called Rama?
Things? Or name their kid that. I mean, when I see her name like Ram, and I've heard, you know, I've seen a couple of people named Ram. The most famous, of course, now is the mayor of Chicago, former chief of the White House. But you sit there and you go, who did this? Who really named their kid Maggot? Thief.
Right.
You know, Big Mouth.
Quick question. Ramadan.
Ramadan.
Yeah, it's
the same root, isn't it?
The same root. And it's Hebrew. You know, every important word in
Hebrew.
Arabic.
I mean, Arabic
is from Hebrew.
Yeah.
Right, including Quran, which means to read and recite. So, yeah, Ramadan. Yeah, that's the basis of Ramadan.
Wow.
No, I mean, really, these names, these words mean things. Yahweh spoke the universe into existence. He used vibrations to do it, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what words are, and then people go out and they carry these names, and apparently pretty proudly too. Wow.
Well, based on your two options you've given us, it has to be number two. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Why would you just, because what every translation does is they just said that, you know, it came up to him in
a pound of place.
But it, right. But, yes, there's a place that was in Benjamin, which is telling. But why not look up what the word means? This was for treachery. This was for
betrayal.
You know, all the names mean something. Now, what I have here, and we'll just start on the first one because we're still recording but no longer broadcasting, guys, and I'd like to pick up on this one next time because what I found is that Yahweh listed 12 things that were hostile about human government. The 12 things he said that governments were going to do to people. And it's priceless, man. It is so rich. So I was hoping that we would do that on our next program. But this is what he said. He said, they actually said to him, behold, you are old, and your sons have not walked in your ways. So then, now, put in place for us a ruler to judge us, just like all of the Gentile nations. Are you aware of a guy that wanted to be the great apostle to the Gentile nations that called what Yahweh had written old?
Well, that would be Shaul.
Yeah.
In fact, didn't he say that the old system was poneros?
Yep.
Pornographic.
Yeah, I just put that note out today again. Yeah, it was porn. I had a guy challenge that word. Well, that just means bad. It just means this. Yeah, it means all kinds of bad, pal. That's what I told
pal.
And you find his
so calling the Torah bad is okay.
Yeah, like
yeah,
that's okay.
Pretty
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
Tell
you know,
me.
The word porn in English is based on the Greek porneros. He called the Old Testament. I mean, that was the first means of the first attempt to create what was called an Old Testament, the Old System. So the Old Testament he called poneros. Yeah, he called it corrupt, bad, evil, disgusting, illicit. That's why we name, you know. You think that porn was chosen based upon the Greek poneros to say lofty and noble, beautiful and elegant?
No.
Mindset.
I think everybody knows what porn is. Illiterates know what porn
is.
I mean,
yes.
People who should have heard it
know how to go to the local library and get on the computer and Google porn.
He called Yahweh.
I'm going to tell you, you guys want to get rich? You guys want to get rich? You want to make some money? You really want to make some serious money? Figure out a way to sell hoops that Paulettes can jump through in order to defend Paul. And I'll tell you, you'll be rich. Just jump through this hoop and then jump through that hoop. You know, one of the great ones yesterday.
Isn't that what the church has done?
So for this idiot he was just calling the old system, which would be the Old Testament, which is Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and so on, he was just calling it bad. He wasn't calling it porn. He was just calling it bad.
Yeah, sure.
That's what we get.
All kinds of bad.
So what's your point, pal?
Yeah. I had another one yesterday. You know the whole thing on how Paul is lowly and little?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and there's it is pointed out here, 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 and here, and then you have Shimon in 3:16 saying, you know, what he propagates is Sophia, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, now here is what Shimon really said. Read it word for word, and he says, this is what the guy said. He first of all he called Shimon by a Greek nickname. He didn't get it right. He said Kepha. He says, Kepha, he says, the Greek that Kepha wrote is just poorly translated.
Yeah.
And I said, and you're presenting
is not a name, it is a word.
Yeah.
And the word means rock. And so it became in Greek, rock is Petra. And so it became Peter because it's wrong. He didn't have a Greek name. The fellow had a name. His name was Shimon. Yosha called him Shimon, which means he listens, the Rock. And it was
the
Rock.
Nickname,
the
Rock.
Yeah,
okay.
I thought
Kepha was. I thought Kephesh was the Greek nickname.
No, I'm sorry.
Kephesh,
Kephesh is the Aramaic, and Aramaic is in most cases Aramaic is Hebrew. In this particular case, the Hebrew would be Sur.
I made a mistake in that. But how do you call the oldest and thus extant version of what he said a poor translation when you're showing it word for word? You cannot do that. And by just saying Sophia, that was the end of it. That's a full stop right there. Because Paulos made the claim he spoke with the authority of the Ruach. Period.
Right.
So that's total opposition
but
right there.
Shimon Kephesh goes on to say that his testimony misleads, that it corrupts him.
Destructive.
Circular reasoning. Yeah, I mean, in fact, his condemnation of Paul's letters was so blistering that Calvin wanted to remove what the book they call Second Peter from the New Testament because destroyed Paul's credibility.
Because Calvin could read.
Right.
You know, I mean, whatever else he could do, he could read. He didn't seem to care much about the truth, but he did. He could at least read.
Right. He hated Peter. Shimon.
I bet he
hated
did.
Him. Yeah, he hated him. Loved Paul because, well, of course, Paul was a Gnostic. Yeah.
Can you imagine that, though? The only guy whose interpretations you can't read are Paul's. That's what they all come up with.
So
you mean to tell me you can read Zechariah, you can read Eliyah, you can read Malachi, you can read Yashiah, but you can read Matanyah, you can read Yohanan, but somehow Paul just escapes everybody. It's like magic.
Yeah, it's like magic.
He's the only guy you can't truly understand. Supposedly,
you can't interpret. It's just way too insane.
Well, that'd be a good true statement of Paul.
Yeah.
Well, he does. He can't tell you anything.
His writing is like reading the diary of a madman.
Yeah.
It is so pathetic, so disgusting, so internally contradictory. You know, the argument that Paul makes for the Torah being dead in Romans 7 has got to be the most insane, illogical, just utterly ridiculous argument that has ever been made in the name of God. Or that in the 13th chapter where he's saying you ought to submit to Rome because God appointed them and they're a force for good and they only wield the sword for good. And you look at the history of Rome and what God had to say about Rome. I mean, it is the diary of a madman.
No, he's clearly insane, but my point is, and we know he's insane, but the lengths that these people go to, you know, the reason that this conversation even got started with this clown, and of course we threw him out, it was out in Shannon's group, was because he said, why is it you people all think that the Apostle Paul was false? So I put up, no kidding, 10 notes.
Mm-hmm.
10 notes that explained it. I said, but you have to be able to read. And then the first thing he did was said, I think you're misinterpreting, and he did all that within 2 minutes. So he read 10 notes within, you know, two minutes. Yeah, he skipped the part where he asked the question and got the answer. They don't care.
How could you misinterpret Paul where he says that the covenant that is codified in the Torah, the one on Mount Sinai, was with Hagar and enslaves.
Yeah, well, how could you misinterpret? I wish people under the Torah would be castrated. I put that single line out.
Yeah, how do you miss that his single biggest argument that he wrote with his own hand was in opposition to circumcision, the sign of the covenant? How do you miss that? I mean,
you're circumcised, and the Messiah profits you nothing.
Right.
Yeah, how do you misinterpret that? That's pretty straightforward in what he's saying. But it's really not an alternative view for that.
when
well,
he
you know what
that,
the trick
and,
is.
I'm demon possessed and that Satan controls me because my ego would otherwise be out of control. How do you misinterpret that?
Well, it's not only that. Well, see, one of the things that they've done, this is one of the things they've taken to doing, is they go out and they get an Aramaic New Testament or a Hebrew New Testament. And, you know, it's interesting because,
wow,
you know, we all know that they were picked for political reasons.
Where do you find one of those?
Not only that, isn't it interesting that it's got the exact same canon? I mean, how would you find all these Aramaic or Hebrew writings that were burned and everything else? How would you find, and by the way, they have the same corruptions that were added.
So they
translate from Old Latin, from Greek, from Hebrew. Yeah, you're much better off going that route than going.
Yeah, you just go an extra language. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's all that's going on.
That's literally what happened. Is they took English or translated it back into Hebrew, and then
it's easy to prove.
New Testament.
It's easy to prove. The thing with the he who cast the first stone, no man knoweth.
If that's
not
even there,
the son.
You know, strike
all
one,
these
you're
things
out.
Are in there.
Yeah,
all the same corruptions are in there.
Oh my!
And they call Papas Wormwood, just like an English New Testament. It's a Wormwood.
Wow.
Oh yeah, well,
I'm looking at one. I just pulled it out of my drawer, and it's got the English on one side and the Hebrew on the other. So, but they obviously just went from the English backwards.
He who is without sin cast the first stone. That story's in there. I promise you. I'm sure it is.
Oh,
yeah.
I just use it because occasionally there might be a word or something that's, if you want to know what they were translating.
You know, there are some things in the that are recorded by Matanya that are extremely important to, if they're in Yosha's voice, to translate from Greek back into the language that he would have spoken them in Hebrew. So there are places where if you want to understand it, you have to convert the Greek into Hebrew because he didn't speak Greek to understand what he said. And you
mean like, upon this rock I will establish my Moed, Mikra.
Well, it's like I said before, yeah, you don't really have to have a complete understanding of Hebrew to understand the Torah. You do to have to understand, to be able to understand the Greek text. If you really want to understand Yosef's life and what he said, you have to understand Hebrew to a degree that you can read the Greek word and then be able to realize what Hebrew word would have been used.
When Yosef is translated saying Ecclesia,
to understand the Greek than you do to understand the Hebrew.
Correct. When he is translated saying Ecclesia, you have to recognize what is the only Hebrew word that can be translated ecclesia. Mikra. That's it. Mikra. There's no other Hebrew word that can be translated ecclesia other than mikra. So now rather than having a church or even having an ecclesia, you've got a mikra. And profound. So you're right. There are, if you don't understand that he spoke in Hebrew and you can't render his discussion back into Hebrew so that you know the nuances of the words and the actual words he used, you're not going to understand what he said.
At least in Hebrew, you can look up, you know, a dictionary. You can bring up 10 different dictionary definitions of the word and, you know, come to an understanding. With the Greek, you have to be able to translate it back yourself to be able to get to that point.
You have to know more Hebrew
to understand Greek than to understand Hebrew.
Right. And one of the challenges of Greek, of course, is that their tenses and their grammar is radically different than Hebrew. So in Hebrew, you've got a language where the verbs are liberated in time, and they are never stuck in time, unlike Greek. And you've got a language that has stems that establish a relationship between the subject and the object based on the action of the verb. And you've got moods that are volitional. And then you have the concepts of ongoing and habitual with unfolding consequences and a completed action. You've got none of that in Greek. And then most of the words in Greek are framed out of the Greek philosophy and religion.
That's the hard part.
That exists in Hebrew. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the tricky part.
And even the Greek alphabet doesn't have the letter sounds to transliterate any of the most important names in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. So now where are you?
It's probably one of the worst languages to change from Hebrew to that.
That's the reason I don't put a whole lot of time into studying any of the Greek texts.
I don't need to. My friend, Yard, over here, he started using a lot of it one time on about four shows, and I said, I'm lost.
Yeah, who did that? Who was doing that?
Craig was doing that, so I bought a couple of books to try to figure stay up.
And I have trouble keeping up with the Hebrew stuff. I have no interest in trying to learn the Greek.
I have my English, Greek, Hebrew, and then a whole bunch of
the only notes I have on it are showing, you know, what extant material from, say, the 2nd century looks like mixed to the modern.
If you're going to analyze Paul's letters, you have to translate them out of the Greek because he wrote in Greek. You've got to render them out of the Greek back into Hebrew and then explain what he said in Hebrew.
You know, once a person... Yes. Now, I want you to think about that. You know, you got a triple play here in Ramah. You really do. Because you've got Sheol, and what is he doing? Well, that first of all, it's like Sheol. They're written
identically.
Then you've got Sheol being called lowly and little by Samuel, right? Mm-hmm. He said, I know you're lowly and little. Mm-hmm. And then Paulos, whose parents were somehow mentally retarded and named him Sheol, just after the king that Yahweh hated and wanted
and
to go dead.
And then Paulos himself being insane by changing his name to a Latin name, a Roman name,
Paulos,
that means lowly and little.
Lowly and little. And
particularly
and
when Yahshua said that the one that demeans the Torah shall be called lowly and little.
Yeah, and then, I
was talking to this with someone the other day, and their defense of, because I was pointing out, like, you know, realize Paul, they changed his name to Paulos, which means lowly and little, you realize that, like, well, that was just him showing that he was humble. And I'm like,
When was Paul ever humble?
That was my reaction.
He had to be demon-possessed to control his ego. If you need to control your ego, you've got a problem.
I'm going to tell you, he was so humble. Yeah, so humble. That he spoke in direct opposition to Yahweh and wished that Shimon and the rest of them would be castrated. That's very humble. But I'll tell you something about this prick. No, seriously. First of all, you've got the town Ramah. Now you got, and then you got Sheol. Then you got Paulos. And I think that the beast will not only be a Pauline Christian. I believe, just like Sheol, he'll come out of the house of Benjamin, because Raquel said that there was a beast inside her, and I think she was talking about the triple play, the three of them: Sheol, Paulos, and the beast.
I don't think the Torahless one can be from the tribe of Benjamin, because the Torahless one is from the sea, I think. So I think that the false prophet can be a Benjamite, but I think the Torahless one is going to be a Pauline Christian. For sure.
Well, the only beast he was talking about was Paulos, then. If he cannot beat the beast, then the beast he was talking about was Paulos. And we know why that happened. You know, she liked her daddy's idol, and she buried it. And when they were looking for the idol, she was menstruating, and she knew the men wouldn't touch her, and she buried it, and she sat on the idol. That's how this happened.
Yeah, by the way, do you happen to have, because back a while ago, about a year ago, I translated all of Rachel's commentary about Benjamin, and I shared that. And if anybody,
I have a note on it.
If you could send it to me, I'd appreciate it, because
I don't think it was a year ago. I think this was a more recent thing you did.
Okay, Yeah, maybe so. But if you, Rachel's commentary on Benjamin being a source of great sorrow, and it goes on to condemn him even further. I'd like to, I'm about ready to go back into that and retranslate it. If I don't have to, that would be great, because right now in Samuel 9, starting at the first chapter, we go from government generally being bad to the particular name of the individual that's going to be the head of that human institution. And it begins with him being a Benjamite, and then goes to him being Shaul. And I've just finished translating the names of the laundry list of names that lead to Shaul, and it's really, really interesting. The names of the interest of the people that ultimately lead to Shaul. In fact, I'll just share them with you now. It says, "Now there was an individual of Benjamin. Benjamin from Ben, son, and Yom, headed south to the sea." The sea is the symbol for Gentiles. And Yom, you know, when I looked at this first, you know, everybody who says Yamin means right hand. Well, Yad is hand in Hebrew. Yom is sea in Hebrew. And Yom means to head south. So the son who is headed south to the sea.
Right, but that's why the beast could be from there. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the beast was in terms of Paul, but the Torahless one, I think is I think the Torahless one's going to be a Pauline Christian. I think his father's going to be a Muslim. I think his mother's going to be an Orthodox or Roman Catholic Christian. And he's going to be educated in a secular humanist school. He's going to be almost identical to Obama, except he'll be born in Macedonia. So it says, he's a Benjamin individual, which I have translated here, son of Yom, Ben-Yom, headed south to the sea. And his name was Cush, bent, as in to be crooked and to bow down, from Cush. To lure into a trap, to lay out bait so as to snare. Son of Abiel. Remember we just did Abiyah, the father is Yah, that was the son of Samuel. Well, this is Abiel, and El at the time was the name of the Canaanite god. So this one's, he is the father is El. Son of Saror, one who besieges and binds as an adversary, one who distresses and ties up. Son of Barokoth, which is firstborn. Son of Apiak, I breathe that which breaks and ensnares. I inflame souls. I am the source of wrath. I am the source
now
of...
Now, who's
wrath.
Coming out of these names? This is all...
Shaul.
Paulos?
Shaul.
No wonder they named him Shaul.
Yeah.
No wonder.
Wow. Yeah, and then it, you know, next is a son of an individual going south. This is now Ben-Ish-Yami. So this is the son of an individual going south to the sea. And then the next is, and his son was named Shaul.
Can I get a copy of that just so I can get off to a good start?
Yeah. I'm in the process of writing it, and what I will do is give me some time tomorrow to make a little more progress on
it.
Where I was just before our show is.
I want a copy of it too. I'm going to make a little note of this.
Yep.
You know,
will,
these people that defend Sheol, these people must think that words mean nothing. They mean nothing at all.
Yeah.
You know, a name is a very important aspect to everything Yahweh does. The name is, way important.
Yeah. There's only one decent name in that whole list.
There was one. Firstborn. Yeah, that was
firstborn.
And of course, he was firstborn to a bunch of bastards, apparently, based on all the names, and continued the tradition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and firstborn, all that meant really there is Bokoroth. is from Bacor.
Right.
And what I do need
like
to do
Bacor.
Is I need, and I really do need to investigate what the wrath means at the end of Bacor. Maybe there's something there too. But it just means that he was the eldest son. That's all it. Well, Karrath would mean eldest son. But all the rest of those, that's bad stuff. But I don't know why I, you know, all the lexicons have Ben Yamin as right hand.
The right
but
hand.
Yam in Hebrew is C. Yam is not hand. Yad is hand. Yam is C.
Yeah.
And it speaks of going south. Yeah, I mean,
well, and you south. Point out that Benjamin always attacked from the south when they attacked you.
Yeah, sure.
But I think that I've got. I don't think I have what you want. I sent it, but I don't.
Okay.
I don't think I
because
made
it. Because I did it
note.
For the Shattering Myths program, and we also presented it here on this program, which was a translation of what Rachel had to say about Benjamin. And, of course, the birth of Benjamin caused her to die.
To die.
Yeah, I remember listening.
Oh, you know, I've got Raquel's warning on there. I do.
Yeah.
So yeah, she ignored the warning and chose to call him Benjamin.
Yeah.
Right.
And the translation of that Barashith passage is the one that I'm looking for that I need to put into this chapter. And if I don't, you know, if nobody has it, then I'll just retranslate. It's not a big deal.
We know
you're
right,
so man. Just don't remember the paperwork.
Yeah. Hey, I'm counting on you, man. You can do
it. Okay. All right. Yeah, I can probably do it.
Hope through my old email, see what I can find for you.
Okay. Yeah, if you find it, great.
I just posted what Ramah means and pointed out that that's where Paulos was from. I mean, why do they call him Sheol of Tarsus? Of course, that reminds me of the bull.
No, the Shaul that became Paul was from Tarsus. He was from present-day Turkey. Anyway, the reason it's helpful to have this kind of stuff is that it just to do a like three verses. It for me is many hours. It's probably 3 hours because you know I will double check every word. I'll look at the tenses, the moods, the conjugations, the moods, and then once you translate and you consider all the various options because you've looked at every root of every word and all the words that are akin to it, and then you can't help but comment on what you're learning. And so by the time you've done it, you know, it's a pretty good investment of time.
3 hours and about 8 pages.
Yeah. Yep. But it's necessary here because they're talking about Benjamin is used twice. One as actual Benjamin and Benjamin, and the other one speaks of an individual who is going south. Son, and then Ish individual, and then Yamin going south to the sea. So it's not Benjamin at the end. It's always translated as Benjamin, but it's not written that way.
So isn't
it's
that something?
South to the sea.
Yeah, we gotta cover gotta cover everything up.
Did you ever think you'd find this much in First Samuel?
No. No, or
that's where this is going.
Or Judges. I mean, you're my young.
Well, that's, I mean, the entire Torah is loaded. So I mean,
no, but I mean, you just don't. You see these little parts, and you never think, my gosh, that's just
overwhelming.
What he put in that.
Right. Well, and he's always talking about the lowly and little. It doesn't matter if it's over in Yashaya or it's here or wherever. You know, he's always talking about this guy that's, you know, everything that he dislikes is lowly and little. And you pointed out last week that's the antithesis of what his promise is to magnify us, you know.
Rich and empowered. Right, so the man is lowly and little, and Yahweh is enriching and empowering.
Well, you talk about the antithesis. There it is. That's there.
That's what Yahweh was saying. In fact, when you look at within Shamuel 7 and 8, is that God is saying, if you choose religion, you're rejecting me. If you choose government, you're rejecting me. So it's God or government, religion or relationship.
You know, and they get most people one way or the other, don't they? Yeah. I mean, they really do.
Yeah. I mean, how many people will tell you they're patriotic? How many people will tell you they support their troops? How many people
entire wars are fought to support patriotism? And it's not just America. It's all of them.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah, it's not just America.
Well, they're a bunch of stooges. They're stooges being used in every case.
Larry, when you read the list of 12, I mean, gosh, you'll have enough material all week, if not all month.
Good. We'll get right.
Oh yeah, the 12 here. Yeah, I've already translated that. I'll send you the 12 there. Yeah, Yahweh was not very impressed with human government.
He's not very impressed with humans.
Yeah, he laid it all out.
He left a little room for some of us.
Yeah, one of the things.
Well, you know what? I think he loves
tax. He's going to tax you. He's going to take your sons. He's going to take your productivity. He's going to take your daughters. He's going to tax this, and he's going to tax that, and then he's going to
redistribute the
money to those who are loyal to him.
And at this point, you know, I don't think we've got much to worry about because, you know, we walked out of that. We oppose it. We speak against it. We openly oppose it. I mean, that's what we do,
mm-hmm.
You know.
And Yahweh says, if you do that, he'll protect you from it.
Yeah, I'm openly opposed to these pricks on every level, and I know we all are, all of us, and all the people in the chat room.
Oh, the idiots that are running for president. Wow, what a sick, perverted group of egotistical, lying bastards! Wow,
the man. Well, I think really funny here,
No, you know, I think they are all that.
The big Christian. And he is absolute lies. I mean, he will stoop to anything, any deception, to win a vote. I mean, what he did in Iowa should disqualify him from being a citizen, much less running for president.
You know, I asked one of his supporters. You know, who's into all the big conspiracies. I said, does it give you any pause that, you know, his wife was a vice president for Goldman Sachs? I mean, does that bother you at all? You know, the guy?
Said that the Constitution was a divinely inspired document?
Not one bit, they told me. Not one bit.
The fact that he went into the Iowa caucuses and lied and said that that Carson has withdrawn from the race, so if you were going to vote for him, you need to vote for me instead?
It's astounding. You know, one of the things you point out, you know, it's not only are their words misleading and all this. You said one of the things that got you, and it gets me, is that their words are lame. I mean, lame. Yeah.
Yeah, the rhetoric of all of them is so similar, and it's so ridiculous. You know, they all want to continue the status quo. What we need
is to have more
money spent in the military. We need to be more invasive. We need to blow more people up. We can just kill our way to prosperity. We'll kill our way to world peace.
Yeah.
You know, the
world peace.
Yeah, the American-backed Iraqi military demonstrated that there is only one way to defeat Islamic fundamentalism. You know what they did to Ramallah, speaking of Rom?
Yeah, they wiped it out, didn't they?
They wiped it out. The way they took back Ramallah is they literally obliterated Ramallah. Ramallah doesn't even exist anymore.
No.
They obliterated it. So, there you go.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the fun stuff. We'll start looking at number 9. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. Yep. All right, guys. Well, thank you. It was fun.
Okay.
Happy Shabbat.
No, that was an eye opener, and I'm sure next week it'll even get better. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. All right.
Ready, guys. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.